Hello.
Hello, Soraya, it's Jeff. How's it going?
All right.
So tonight we're going to be talking about the Dream Syndicate show that we saw. Yeah, so that took place on February 15th, 2020, at the Echoplex in Los Angeles, and there was a few of us there, quite a few of us actually, and we wanted to put together a little panel and talk about that. And we kind of know a lot about Dream Syndicate, you and I, but we're by no means the expert.
Not at all, but the two guys we're bringing on to help us kind of process this, I'd definitely put them in that expert category.
And who are those two people?
Well, the one and only Pat Thomas and Ronnie Barnett.
Nice. So I'm looking forward to talking to them and seeing what they thought of the show. I had some brief conversations with them about what they thought, but it'll be neat to see what they have to say as we dig in.
Yes.
All right. So I say we get started.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires. Hi, this is Soraya.
And this is Jeff.
Our podcast is called Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme,
a podcast where the two of us play music that we like and share anecdotes and background about the tunes.
We hope you'll join our conversation. And without further ado, agrubiar.
Let's get groovy.
Groovy. Groovy. Groovy. Groovy.
All right, let's see if these two will take our call. Hello, Pat Thomas. This is Jeff and Soraya. How are you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
We're doing great. So we are also giving Ronnie a call. See if
Hello? Did I catch you?
you caught me and caught Soraya and caught Pat Thomas. This is
Whoa.
like the catch of the day.
What a
There we
crew.
go.
All right, you guys. Well, we wanted to thank you both so much. Soraya and I were just talking about the fact that we know a little bit about Dream Syndicate, but we're by no means the experts. So that's why we're very thankful to have Pat Thomas, who, according to Steve Wynn, is the most knowledgeable person about Dream Syndicate on the planet Earth.
I'm not going to deny that. That is very I can only agree with it. I can't
I
add
love
to
that.
it, or can't
I love
add
the
to
dead
it, or
serious answer there. Yeah, Pat
yeah,
Thomas, he's the
exactly.
go-to guy.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful, folks.
Facts on facts. Facts on
Hey,
facts.
if I disappear for like 1 minute, it's because I'm going to get my Thai food, you guys.
All right. First things
Yeah.
first.
Okay, Mark.
Priorities.
Yes.
So on
You can cut
February.
that out of the broadcast.
All right, sounds good. All right, so on February 15th, 2020, this year, the Dream Syndicate were part of an amazing show that took place at the Echoplex in Los Angeles, and the four of us were there among a bunch of other folks, and we just wanted to talk a little bit about that show and what you guys thought. I wanted to start off real quick and talk about the opening acts real quick. There were three extra artists that were on the bill: Dimebox Band, Tracy Bryant, and some DJ guy flipping tunes. Well, and we wanted to talk a little bit about that. So Dimebox Band, for me, that was really interesting that they were on the bill. It features Christy Callan of Wednesday Week, and I've been wanting to see them but haven't had an opportunity, so I'm really glad that they were on the bill. I know, Soraya, you weren't there when they were playing. You got there a little bit late. What did you guys think, Ronnie and Pat, of seeing Dimebox Band?
Well, I was a Wednesday Week fan, and I've known Christy for years, and I guess through Wild Honey, I kind of met Lynn Bertels, who plays violin, Dimebox, and they've got, of course, Nick Vincent on drums, also from Wild Honey Orchestra. Just great, kind of solid Americana, little bit of country influence in there. Just a good band.
Perfect.
I want to add about Nick Vincent that Nick is an amazing musician. It's played on a lot of records, including Mbop by Hanson.
What?
Okay.
No.
Yes, Nick did a lot of session work back in the 90s, and he also plays on those first two Frank Black records,
Oh,
the ones
wow.
after the
Wow.
Pixies, Teenager of the Year, and the self-titled one. Nick is like one of my favorite drummers, and I'm not just saying that because he might be listening. He's a yeah. So, But yeah, I thought the Don Buckets Band was great. And I got to say, Christy and David's son on the lead guitar, James, was ripping. He's a great guitar player. It runs in the family.
He really is. Mm-hmm. We had seen him play keyboards before when we went to the last show, but seeing him on guitar, he's a much, much better guitar player than I would ever expect. And then they ended this set with Amanda Ruth, the Rank and File song. That was pretty cool.
That was cool. I'd like to add that Christy Callen is also a huge Absolute Grey fan.
Oh, she is, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, just like your earlier comment about the Dream Syndicate, I can't deny that either.
See, Pat, I got it in there, all right? So
thank you, Matt, thank you.
Yeah, he didn't want to mention it.
And I had an opportunity to talk to Christy, and she's a wonderful person. And I understand that Wednesday Week is in the studio with Don Dixon recording some new stuff, so that's pretty exciting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, so moving on. Tracy Bryant was somebody that was added to the bill, I think, late. And I was a little disappointed because I didn't want there to be more bands in between that would make it longer before Dream Syndicate hit the stage. But I thought he did a pretty good job. And I could not, for the life of me, think of who he reminded me of. But then, Ronnie, you let me know, right?
Yeah, the vocal style was a very, like, almost a carbon copy, like Tom Verlaine style. Maybe by the venue. I don't, because, you know, they weren't billed. You know, no one knew they were going to play.
They were added by the venue, which actually forced Dimebox to play a half hour earlier than they were scheduled. So a lot of Dimebox's personal friends showed up late. Or, no, actually showed up on time, but became late, if you follow what I mean.
Wow.
Yeah.
In other words, they were announcing the Dimebox would play at 9, I think, and they were forced to go out at 8:30. Yeah, the Tracy Band, right, it had this sort of New York City television sound, and, you know, they weren't bad, but they were sort of superfluous to the evening. Not that they did anything wrong, but they just, I don't know, just didn't seem like we needed them.
Yeah, I would agree. I really enjoyed that lead guitar player that they had. It was nice to watch. But again, it was interesting that that got added. So I'm glad that you guys had that insight. I had no idea about that. And then after that, there was a DJ that started playing some interesting tunes.
Now you're talking.
Yes, now you're talking. I'll announce who it was. It was, of course, our own Ronnie Barnett here on the phone with us. And, of course, bass player of the Muffs. And he was personally invited by Steve Wynn to participate in the evening and DJ that night.
Yeah, I woke up one morning to a message from Steve just asking if I would DJ, which is a offer I don't usually get or have ever gotten. so I was most nervous using the equipment. I really didn't. I didn't know. I was hoping it was easy and that I'd be able to wrap my head around it. And that, yeah, they didn't just show me like the stuff and say, okay, there you go. And I had to figure out which dials and buttons to use. But somebody did have to show me, but it was pretty easy. I got the hang of it. And I had my buddy Pat alongside me and Julie, my fiance, to hold a flashlight so I could see. So I was amongst the people, which was a little disappointing. I was down there with the riffraff behind the soundboard. you know, easily approachable. But, you know, that was fun. And I got to say, they had me, like, as loud, well, the Dream Syndicate was loud. We'll get to that. But they had me as loud as a rock band. And, yeah, it was a blast. I kind of got the hang of it by the time it was time to finish. And I got to say, about three songs into the Dream Syndicate, I turned to Julia. I wish they'd finish so I could DJ some more. Okay.
So, yeah, I would say, yeah, the only thing, since we're you know, being candid here, I think all of us were under the impression that Ronnie would be DJing throughout the evening, so it was a little weird that, I know when Ron first got there, there was actually a DJ that the club had picked, and so, you know, two-thirds of the night was that guy, and nothing wrong with that, but the whole thing was a little odd, but...
It's true. Yeah, I never talked to anybody from the venue in advance, so I did. I picked out tons more music. Yeah, I thought I'd be doing it all night too, but I was just hoping nobody was gonna blame me for the stuff that that guy was playing, because let's face it, it was not a. Again, as Pat said, no offense to that guy, but you know, he was doing a DJ job, whereas I was kind of tailoring it to the evening. But
right,
you know, yeah.
No, and you had a great set. You had a great set list. You published it on social media afterwards and got good feedback. Even Steve Wynn chimed in on some of your picks. I will say, though, it was low on the Kiss end of things, but it was tailored for tonight.
I didn't have time. I was going to slip the instrumental Escape from the Island from Music from the Elder in there.
Oh, yes.
Because most people wouldn't know it was Kiss, you know. But Jeff would have known. But, yeah.
Well, since we're discussing Kiss, I for those of you who were at Wild Honey last night, you may have noticed that from the stage, I announced, ladies and gentlemen, the world's biggest Kiss fan, Ronnie Barnett.
And Jeff, just so you know, it was Chrissy Callum that from the stage, right before she's about to sing 6 o'clock, she says, she gave a shout out to Pat and to Absolute Gray.
Wow.
Which actually I didn't hear.
What?
I was told later by a friend. You know, the one thing about being to the side of the stage or backstage is you particularly can't hear any stage announcements, frankly. So I totally missed her complimenting me.
Well, when she said it, I yelled. So
cool.
So
yeah,
you have your Absolute Gray had their fans in the audience too.
Yeah, I heard there were maybe about 10 cheers, so there was that was nice.
All right. So let's you know, that DJ Ronnie Barnett, kid's got a future, you know. Maybe he'll play another set somewhere down the road. Okay, so let's talk about just in general about this Dream Syndicate show. Were there any surprises for any of you of what you heard?
Well, I'll take the lead here for a second, folks. So I did what I've been doing, I think, for, I don't know, 35 years, which is generally getting to a Dream Syndicate or a Steve Wynn show and sound check, hanging out, going with the band to dinner, you know, and then coming back and watching the show. So I was backstage, and generally the set list is often put together by Dennis Stuck with some input from Steve. So Steve was mulling over the idea of making the first two-thirds of the show all new material, and by all new, I mean not the forthcoming album that's about to come out, but, you know, the last two recent albums, the two albums on Anti. And then he was sort of hemming and hawing. So, well, you know, maybe we should put some old fan favorites in between here. And I said, you know what? I said, be brave, man. Just go out there and play, you know, I don't know what it was, 6 or 7 quote unquote new songs in a row. He says, okay, thanks for suggesting that. And in my opinion, and Steve agreed with me the next day, you know, they're a little less comfortable with those songs, obviously. And I think there was this incredible tension. In other words, you know, everyone in the band was kind of working twice as hard to play the new material than they would have played the older material. And you felt that, you know, Jason Victor's guitar playing right out of the gate was hot. Mark's bass, you know, Dennis, the whole thing. And so I think we got this more, I don't know, more just a hotter show from me rubber stamping, you know, telling Steve, yeah, do that. So I just wanted to mention that.
That was a good idea, Pat, to give them confidence to do that, because I thought it worked great. I mean, of course, I'm a fan and I know these new songs too, but you know, I thought that was a really cool way to do it. And then yeah, then the last half was all just full on old classic.
You know, the Civic had never phoned in some of these songs they've been playing for 30 years, but I think, you know, I think we could all agree, me and Ron as musicians, that when you're playing material that you've only been playing for a year versus something you've played for 30 years, you're just kind of going to be a little more on your A game because you can't just dial it in, phone it in. And they didn't.
Right. I agree.
I did want to add, for me, that a surprise was that they did not play Tell Me When It's Over. And I was surprised that they did include an amazing version of John Coltrane's Stereo Blues. Both of those were surprises. I don't have any complaints whatsoever about the set list. That was just a surprise to me that they didn't play Tell Me When It's Over. But let me run through the set list real quick since we were talking about it. So, as Pat mentioned, the first 8 songs actually were from either How Did I Find Myself Here, that was released in 2017, or These Times. So the first 8 songs were How Did I Find Myself Here, Put Some Miles On, Black Light, Filter Me Through You, Out of My Head, The Whole World's Watching, which was a surprise to me, Bullet Holes. Recovery Mode. So they played all of those before they actually went to some of those classic songs, which I agree, that was an amazing way to start the show. For me, as a Dream Syndicate fan, I love the fact that it was I'll call the Jason Victor era of the band.
Right.
Heavy, and that was amazing. Oh, and I think we should throw in at this point that on keyboards and organ, Willie Aaron was playing. Mm-hmm.
Chris. Oh, thank you. Yeah, a good friend of Willie's. I'm embarrassed I didn't say that earlier, so thanks for that. As I said on Facebook and in real time as the show was happening, there was, besides the sort of fierce playing by everybody, there was a more jazzy or jazzy fusion-y element to the whole set, and I think that was one, the addition of keyboards. I felt Willie was kind of adding these sort of what I called Keith Jarrett stabs from when Keith Jarrett was playing Miles Davis, Bitches Brew era band. And also the band itself, you know, the forthcoming album is very sort of kind of psychedelic jazz fusion instrumental stuff. And so somehow that is even rubbing off on this slightly earlier material. So there was a, you know, it was a little less Velvet's Crazy Horse and a little more, you know, Miles Davis Soft Machine or something. Just, again, very subtle, but just pointing that out.
Yeah, no, and I just want to add that Willie is such an incredible musician. I mean, it's not like those guys practice, you know?
No, they don't.
Yeah, me and Pat were in soundcheck. They did three songs or something, you know, and they weren't doing the stretch out stuff. So Willie is unbelievable musician, and yeah, everyone should know that. So
following those eight songs, they did go into some of the classics, all of which were from either Days of Wine and Roses or from the debut EP. And the next four songs were When You Smile, Halloween, That's What You Always Say. And then Definitely Clean, which was a really cool song. And then they ended the set with Glide from How Did I Find Myself Here, and then they left the stage for a little bit. And then they came back with John Coltrane Stereo Blues, and I think, Soraya, you made some comments about what was included in that, right? That maybe they might have thrown in a little bit from the new record, maybe a little measure or two.
There were a couple of interesting riffs, and again, you know, Jason is just amazing, but like right before Halloween, there are riffs of Marquee Moon, and then, excuse me, but yeah, and then Steve Wynn at the end of the show, Jeff and I had a chance to just chit-chat with him really quick, and he said, yeah, we just kept kind of throwing little riffs and little samples of some of the new material, so... It's really interesting, Pat. I really like the comment you made about it had this jazz fusion feel. The flow of this set was really interesting because they kept giving us extras all along the way, and everything just kind of really, it had a really neat flow to it, this set. I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, I noticed I was just going to say, when I saw Soraya, you posted the set list, and When You Smile wasn't on the set list. So I wondered if Steve just, and this could have very well happened, it happened, being in a band, this kind of thing does happen, where he just maybe felt like this is going to be a great, this song is going to sound really good right here before this, you know, onslaught of old material. It really worked well. So
that was interesting that they threw that in as an audible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and think about what's missing here too is Days of Wine and Roses.
Okay, I'm gonna make a controversial statement, which is I'm glad to see it go.
Okay.
Wow.
I love that song, but I swear to God, these guys have played it in every Dreams of a show I've seen in recent memory, and I just had enough for a while.
And it was perfect.
Leave it to Pat to say something controversial, right?
No, it's good. Someone had to say it, Pat. Yeah.
Well, I always tell Steve I'm his biggest fan. I'm also can be his harshest critic, which is why he to be blunt is kind of why he respects my opinion, because he knows if I go, "Hey man, that was really great," I'm not just blowing a little smoke up his ass, right?
Right.
Because he's heard me go, "Dude, that was pretty terrible. I don't like that song."
Wait, we can say ass on this podcast?
You can say whatever you want.
Ass
now you tell me. Okay. Yeah,
okay.
You know, being in a band, there is always a song that you play every set that you get kind of sick of. And I'd imagine that, I don't know if they're, I'm not going to assume they're sick of it, but yeah, like Pat said, it's, you know, it keeps it fresh for them. Yeah,
that's really interesting that you said that, Pat, because I really enjoyed the set and I don't have any complaints whatsoever. I thought it was amazing. I had a great time, but I just for the sake of conversation, I started thinking, if I could have had a couple songs on there that they didn't play, what would they be? And I decided I would throw something from the classic era and something from the Jason Victor era. And the two songs that came to mind were 80 West from How Did I Find Myself Here. I just love that song. And I thought that would be a great live song. And then Days of Wine and Roses was, interestingly enough, the song that I thought.
Put that one to bed, Jeff. Put that one to bed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of giggling because I'm thinking in my 35-year career, I don't know how many interviews I've done. Let's just say I did 60 or 70, but I've never done one analyzing a live show like this. I sort of feel like we're on NPR. So what did you think when the Manhattan Symphony Orchestra played Brahms Fifth? Well, it had a little nuance there. The conductor, Leonard Bernstein, sort of brought the, you know, the violins up a bit. It was quite nice.
Yeah. I'd like to comment about how when Jason Victor tuned before the, Black Light. Yeah, it was very interesting.
And it's interesting that on our podcast,
I don't think he tuned before Black Light, by the way.
If we really want to take this, I want to switch it maybe over to be more like a food critic, which is that $11 for a well drink is criminal. I thought LA County had a law against that. I was flabbergasted when I ordered a well drink with generic booze and the guy said that'll be $11. So I just want to add that into the mix. That's for
Pat. I think LA County has a law about it not being any cheaper than $11 in this day and age.
So. Yeah, I don't know. That seemed a little excessive. We'll just throw that in there.
That's a whole other show. Why the Echoplex does dumb things like that, but I won't get into that here.
Right.
Yeah. So, no, what I love this encore, John Coltrane's Stereo Blues. We had talked to Dennis and Steve, and they had mentioned this kind of epic, what was it, Jeff, like a 24-minute version.
Right,
so
right.
It was some insane amount. And we got
like 45 minutes. Snippet. Yeah.
We got a little snippet, but you could see like they wanted to keep on. It looked like they wanted to keep on going. That jam could have kept going, and I loved that. They gave me that at the end. I'm like, psh.
No, I like that story that Steve told about playing Santa Cruz and them thinking they're gonna stretch out and that crowd, they're gonna love all this. And they had a 3-song set that was an hour, and the other 2 songs were 3 minutes, and the other song was John Coltrane's Stereo Blues. So that was a good story.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that story before. That's right.
Yeah. So brilliant. We did get a short version. Yeah.
Yeah.
Compared to the night in Santa Cruz.
And then I did want to mention that the night before the band had played, which was Valentine's Day, before the Echoplex show, they played on February 14th at the New Parish in Oakland, and Rain Parade was the opening act. So I heard that was an amazing show. Obviously, we weren't there, but we heard that was an amazing show. And then I did want to mention on that night, they had included in the set Medicine Show, Days of Wine and Roses, Tell Me When It's Over, and then She Remembers. So they had a little bit more, it sounds like it was a little bit more heavy on the classic era, and they didn't play Recovery Mode and the Whole World's Watching, and they didn't do the John Coltrane Stereo Blues. So that was the difference between the two nights.
Yeah, I'll just add, again, I wasn't there either, but that I'm circulating on social media and YouTube is a video, I believe, of Steve sitting in with Rain Parade playing You Are My Friend from Explosions in Glass Palace.
Yeah, and that was incredible. And then that was obviously in light of what happened a few days later with the passing of David Roback, that made that night even more special, knowing that Matt Piucci had written that song about David Roback, and Steve being the singing that song at the New Parish made that even that more, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Poignant. Yeah.
Poignant, yeah.
Poignant after the fact, yeah. And I'm happy to report that we've been talking for 25 minutes. So we did what I suggested. We gave it a nice tight under 30 here.
Yeah, me and Pat are producing the show now.
Oh, yeah, we're producing.
Yeah.
It's a bloody NPR segment now. We got to produce it.
Exactly. I just kind of wanted to mention that because I think we've done this great job of sort of encapsulating it. I think anything after this is going to be a little superfluous. So.
Perfect. Good. I'm glad that you mentioned that. So we did want to wrap it up. Did you guys have any final thoughts that you wanted to say before we close the show out about the Dream Syndicate show or otherwise?
Well, the only thing I'll say is that I've heard the entire new forthcoming album, which is like practically like almost like 4 20-minute songs, although there's some songs that are like 11. But for the handful of listeners that might be familiar with my band Mushroom, the Dream Syndicate album is very Mushroom-esque, if I do say so myself. It's very few vocals. There's electric sitar. There's horns. And by horns, I don't mean like Stax, Volt, soul horns, but like, you know, Miles Davis-y, soft machine, kind of, you know, jazzy, psychedelic horn. So it's, you know, I'm very curious, as I know the band is, how fans react. I think some fans will scratch their head and go, what the hell is this? And other fans will be like, wow. It's easily the most different thing that the band has ever done. It'll really be interesting to see how people react when it comes out.
It's kind of outside the Dream Syndicate, right, Pat?
It is outside the Dream Syndicate, and dare I say, again, since you know you've got me here as the insider, the band originally took their name from a 1972 era album called Outside the Dream Syndicate, which was this guy Tony Conrad, who'd been with John Cale in a band called the Dream Syndicate in the mid-60s. And Tony Conrad made an album with Krautrocker's Faust. So when the Dream Syndicate first started, Steve had already put out this single under the name 15 Minutes. And so, you know, at that point, Steve just figured we'll just call ourselves 15 Minutes. And Donna Steck said, you know, we need something a little more exciting. There was a record collection. He said, why not call ourselves the Dream Syndicate? So anyway, given the weird psychedelic nature of this new album, Steve wrote to me months ago and he said, I think we're going to call this album Outside the Dream Syndicate. What do you think? And I said, great. You know, sort of a nod to your own history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I figured it was a done deal until, you know, it wasn't. So I'm still ragging on those guys for changing the title. That was going to be the title. That was the sort of working title, I guess, if you will, of this new album until recently.
Interesting.
Yeah. Thank you, Pat. I had to set up Pat with that one. That was a good.
Perfect.
I just want to add that look, if we want to fill out some more time, we can talk about Kiss some more.
I have a feeling that Pat's connection is suddenly going to go away.
That'll be the next episode, and we'll invite Dominic for that one. So that should be
exactly. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, I'd like to see. I would actually pay money for a Ronnie Barnett versus Dominic Fiore Kiss podcast.
Soraya,
you guys would play a Kiss classics as well as deep cuts. Well, Ron and Dom sort of weigh the pros and cons of the individual tracks.
Oh my God.
Bring it on. I ran into Dominic in the record store about a month ago, and I asked him to pose with me with a Kiss record, and he would not do it.
What?
Yes.
Well, the thing about Dom, and I don't want to get into too much mudslinging, you know, he's really lacking a sense of humor on this topic. If he had one, the whole thing would be much more palatable.
Soraya, we got to try to make this happen. But
I'm sorry, but not taking a photo in the rap community? Mm-mm-mm. That's the setting for a rap battle. So,
yeah, exactly. Ronnie,
we're going to have a kiss-off. Let's just wrap it up.
Okay, so Pat.
That sounds good, guys.
Pat, thank you so much for adding in your input. You are a resident and just flat-out Dream Syndicate expert. So thank you so much.
All right, happy to help you guys out, man.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Pat.
Okay.
And
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
hope. Thanks.
Talk to y'all soon.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Right. Thanks again, Ronnie.
Bye, Irma.
Bye.
Bye, Irma. All right. Man, those guys were a lot
I
of fun.
I love the two of them, honest. But
yeah.
Look, Pat said something I think that was really poignant. He said a few things that I think are really important to kind of reiterate. One, the show that we got from the Dream Syndicate was unique, especially because of that kind of the way they arranged the set list, leading off with newer material. And, you know, he used the word tension, you know, that there was this kind of initial tension. But I gotta admit, when he said, but that kind of led to it being really kind of a hotter show. Like Jason came out hotter, and it seemed like Steve was just looking for moments for them to kind of, you know, jam together and do something different. So it was really a unique show. And that jazz fusion element that Pat mentioned, it's so evident. And then when you think about this new release, and for those of you listeners, if you've taken a listen to The Regulator, which has been released and circulated, it definitely gives you a little glimpse of that. But I really like what Pat said at the end. He goes, okay, Days of Wedding Roses, you know, for now, take a seat. There's other, you know, the other material. And, you know, you and I remarked after the show, for me, closing with John Coltrane's Stereo Blues, that to me was really... That kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I have talked about it, and I'd love to hear it. Boom. They gave it to me on a silver platter, and it just seemed to go on and on. And, like, Days of Wine and Roses is always kind of that improv piece for me, because they play it, and then, like, they just kind of start adding things to it, and it becomes this really fluid piece, right?
Yep.
And it's never the same twice. And I just like the fact that they're willing to continuously open new paths and explore a little more of their own catalog. You know, I like that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. What a great night. I'm glad that we got to recap it tonight.
Ooh, that was fun.
And then it was following the show, we did have an opportunity to talk to Steve for a little bit, which was really nice. And he had some really nice compliments for you, which was really cool to see. And then he mentioned that sometimes he'll listen to our show while he's working out. So, Steve, if you're working out right now, give us 3 more reps before you call it.
Drop and give us 10. But, yeah, what do you say about the Jack Watterson episode? That was a 3 workouter.
Yes.
And Mark Walton was also super kind to chit-chat with us after the show. And, you know, I teased him a little bit, and I said, well, now you get a chance to rest. I go, I don't want to. I'm ready to keep going.
Yeah.
And knowing that, what, we saw them in February. The release is April. Pre-orders are already available. And we know that these guys are going to, you know, the band is going to be playing. But, like, Steve's playing a series of solo shows.
And those are great,
you
too.
Know, so yeah. No rest for the weary, honest, but... you know, Steve said it before. He said it in a few print interviews, and he did mention it with us. It's really nice seeing this version of Dream Syndicate play together and record together. Look at what the releases we've had from them, from this lineup. Hats off.
Yes, indeed. I mean, they're I don't know, they're probably at their hottest point that they've ever been, I'd say.
And then, you know what? Kudos.
And then we also got an opportunity to talk to Dennis Duck again, which was really special, too, because we always enjoy talking to him.
He's great.
He is.
And yes, you all need the disco Dennis Duck album.
Yes, he was kind enough to sign my
contract. Which was so kind to bring to our attention.
Yes.
And it is trippy, dude.
Yes. And then I had an opportunity to have Dennis sign my copy of it that night.
That's right.
All right. Well, we better cut this before
we've gone past our half hour.
We may get some minus points from Pat and Ronnie if this gets released and it's too long. So,
so. Okay. So, anyways, people, I'm gonna be out. Go pre-order the Dream Syndicate, the Universe Inside.
Groove on, Paisley people.
Is the KISS expert here?
Well, he mentioned.
Or did he leave?
He mentioned that when the Thai food came, that he'd be gone, and I think
he left at a very opportune time.
Exactly. It's nice that we have producers for our show now. So this is something that I've been waiting for a long time.
And our dream came true.
Our dream came true. And what better producers could we have on a Dream Syndicate panel than Pat Thomas and Ronnie Burnett?
Sorry, nobody. Ronnie,
sorry.
That's sorry. Okay, man. Did you get your food?
Sorry. I was trying to get rid of his phone call, and then I ended up hanging up on you guys. So,
but just
sorry. You guys are probably doing the wrap up now, and I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
It's no, not at all, man.
But
we weren't gonna call you back anyways.
All right. Well, you go. You go eat.
We're gonna let you go
eat your dinner.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.